proving to Eretz Yisrael has its roots in today's Sedra. In the Parshas HaShavuot we read the way the brothers of Yosef came from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt, and the expression used is Vayeridu Acha Yosef, that they went down to Egypt, and then when they were moving back from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael, they're back to the fathers, of the Pasuk says Vayalu Acha Yosef. So the Gemara comments and the Medrash comments on that expression that because Eretz Yisrael Gevoha Mikol HaAratzes, the land of Israel is taller up, higher up, it sounds as if in altitude it's taller than the rest of the world. That's why we call one who goes to Eretz Yisrael as an Oleh. It's called Aliyah. One who goes from Eretz Yisrael to the other parts of the world is called a Yoreid. Exactly what does that mean? Eretz Yisrael Gevoha Mikol HaAratzes? That it's higher in altitude is not true. The Swiss Alps is much higher than Eretz Yisrael. Sure, there are parts of the United States that are much higher also. So the commentaries explain that what it means is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Mishesh is made Breishes, what part of the world did he hold on top when everything began? He could hold the North Pole on top, he could hold the South Pole on top, whatever he wanted. So what did he hold on top? So he held on top, Eretz Yisrael was on top. But it doesn't mean that it has the highest elevation above the sea level. What's the difference? What part of the world he held on top at the time that he created the world? That you should say it's so gavoh, and we call our roots as it was on top. So that's relevant for a different halacha. That's relevant for the issue of the international date line. When the Rebbe Shlom started all of time, where exactly was the first spot in the world that the Sunday, the beginning of the Sheshes Mei Breishes was Sunday to Friday, and then came Shabbos. So where exactly was the first spot in the world that time began? So according to this comment that the Talmud makes on the Pasuk in today's Sedra, that Eretz Yisrael Gevoha Mikol HaAratzes, Eretz Yisrael was in the center of the hemisphere, the center of the globe, and that was held up on top, and then all of time began 6 hours to the east of Eretz Yisrael. So that's why the Chazon Ish and many, many Pasukim are of the opinion, perhaps the majority of the Pasukim, it's a question of which way the majority hold, the many Pasukim are of the opinion that the international dateline is 6 hours to the east of Yerushalayim. Because when the Rebbe Shlom created the world, he held Eretz Yisrael with Yerushalayim right on top. And all times, so there were really two hemispheres, an upper hemisphere and a lower hemisphere. And the upper hemisphere begins 6 hours to the east of Yerushalayim, and it ends 6 hours to the west of Yerushalayim. So all of time begins at that spot. That cuts through the tip of Siberia. Okay, that's a different topic. So the expression of Aliyah and Yiridah comes from this week's Sedra, the Parshas HaShavuah. That one who goes to live in Eretz Yisrael is considered an Oleh. Is there a mitzvah for non-Jewish people to live in Eretz Yisrael? For sure not. They only are obligated to keep seven mitzvahs. Is there a mitzvah for Jewish people to live in Eretz Yisrael? That's the issue. So we all know that Ramban has a commentary on the Sefer Mitzvahs LaHaRambam. The Rambam lists off which, in his opinion, are the 613 mitzvahs. The Gemara states in several places that there are Taryag mitzvahs, Nemel Olam Moshe Mitzvah, 613. And the Rambam lists off what, in his opinion, are the Ramach mitzvahs Aseh, the 248 mitzvahs Aseh, and the Shin Samachay, the 365 mitzvahs Lois Aseh. And the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam on certain points, and at the end of the section of the mitzvahs Aseh, at the end of the section of the listing of the mitzvahs Lois Aseh, the Ramban has what he calls the Hashmatas, the mitzvahs that the Rambam forgot to list in his minyan. So one of the mitzvahs that the Ramban claims the Rambam forgot to count is this mitzvah. Mitzvah Dalet that the Rambam forgot is Vahirashtem Esa'aretz V'yishavtem Bo. At the end of Chumash Bamidbar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Bnei Yisrael that we should seize hold of the land of Eretz Yisrael, we should conquer it and establish a Jewish government there. V'yishavtem Bo, we should see to it that we should live in Eretz Yisrael. So it's one pasuk that really contains two mitzvahs. One mitzvah is that we should seize control of Eretz Yisrael. It's not enough, the Ramban says, that we should live in Eretz Yisrael under the Turks, or under the Arabs, or under the British, or under the Goyim, whatever, under the United Nations. One mitzvah is that we should seize hold of the land and establish a Jewish government there. And number two, it's not enough we should have a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, we should live in New York. We have to live in Eretz Yisrael. Two parts to the mitzvah. And the Ramban quotes passages from the Gemara where the Chachamim praised so much those who live in Eretz Yisrael, and the Chachamim condemned so much those people who move from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Loretz, or for that matter those people who don't bother to go move and to live in Eretz Yisrael, they stay in Chutz Loretz. So the Ramban points out what an important mitzvah this is, and he claims that this is a biblical obligation. That pasuk in the end of Chumash Bamidbar wasn't only intended for that generation alone, the generation of Yehoshua ben Nun that crossed over the Jordan, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling them that they should live in Eretz Yisrael. That is a commandment for the Jewish people throughout all the generations. And he claims, if the Gemara says you can divorce your wife without paying ksuba, she refuses to go to Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara is not talking in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. The Mishnah is talking in the days of the Tanoim, during the period of the Second Temple, after the destruction of the Second Temple. The Mishnah is speaking for all the generations. It's a din that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. The din says that whenever a man divorces his wife, he's obligated to pay her ksuba, a fixed amount of money. What happens if the husband is not at fault for divorcing the wife? The wife is a witch. She's miserable to him. She's not religious. She doesn't clean the house, whatever. She doesn't want to wash the dishes. She doesn't want to cook the food. She burns his food, whatever. She's not a good wife. So that you have to go to the entire to see. Maybe she can't do any better. Maybe that's the best that she's able to do. So you have no right to divorce your wife and not pay ksuba just because she's not able to do. What if she does for spite? What if she's mean? What if she refuses to go to mikveh? She's spiteful to the husband. She burns all of his food on purpose. So then the husband has a right to divorce his wife and not pay any ksuba because the wife is at fault for breaking up the marriage. So when do we consider the husband at fault? When do we consider the wife at fault for causing the breakup of the marriage? So the Mishnayos and the Talmud in the end of Gemara Ksuba discussed this. So the Mishnah discussed the following scenario. A couple is married, they live in New York for years and years, and then all of a sudden the husband falls to mind on the Shigaz. He wants to pack up and move to Eretz Yisrael. Now he makes $1 million a year, whatever, he's a lawyer. He's going to work on a kibbutz in Eretz Yisrael, make bupkis, and that's it. He wants to do the mitzvah living in Eretz Yisrael. The wife says, are you crazy? You're making so much money, we go on vacation to the Caribbean, whatever, to Switzerland, every week to go on vacation. He's going to work on a kibbutz, he's crazy. So the wife says, go whatever, do whatever you want, I'm going to stay here in New York. So who is Meshuggah and who is the one who is at fault for breaking up? Husband says, I'm going to Israel, whether you come along or not. And the wife says, she's not going to go, she wants to stay. We got married in New York, we lived in New York for the last 30 years, she wants to remain in New York. She's used to this style of living, she doesn't want to change. So we would have thought that the wife is asking for the reasonable thing, and the husband is crazy. So the Mishnah says no, that you have to go to a Bezin to see. Maybe there's more to it than meets the eye. Maybe there's some hidden intention over here. But if that's the whole story, that the husband, Taka L'Shem Shemaim, decided he wants to go live in Eretz Yisrael, L'Shem Mitzvah, and the wife doesn't like it in Eretz Yisrael, she wants to stay in America, so we consider it as if the wife is at fault for breaking up the marriage, and when the husband divorces his wife, he does not have to pay her any ksuba because it's her fault for dissolving the marriage. So in connection with that Mishnah, the Gemara quotes all of the passages from the Psukim and Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, and many members from the Amoraim to stress how significant it is, the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban says, if the man has a right to divorce his wife, because he doesn't want to go to Israel, obviously it's a big mitzvah. Obviously you see that's a tremendous mitzvah. Otherwise, how does he have the right to divorce his wife? So the question is, what does the Rambam do with this Gemara? What does the Rambam do with the Pasuk? What does the Rambam do with the Gemara? So some commentaries on the Rambam claim that he agrees, of course, it's a mitzvah. The Rambam and the Yarach HaZokeh quotes this, all of these dinim. The Shulchan Aruch quotes it, but the Rambam thinks that it's only a mitzvah midirabbanon, and the Rambam postulates the 14 rules. He gives you 14 klolim, which will determine which mitzvahs he will include in the minyan mitzvahs and which not. So the first, because there are really millions and millions and millions of mitzvahs. How can you say there are only 613 mitzvahs? So the Rambam has 14 klolim. So the first klal is that we're only going to count mitzvahs that are min HaTorah, biblical mitzvahs. We're not going to include rabbinical mitzvahs in the minyan and the count of taryag mitzvahs. So some commentaries claim that the Rambam's opinion is that there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, but that's only midirabbanan. There's no mitzvah min HaTorah. But it says the Feirish in the Chumash that you have to go live in Eretz Yisrael. The Rabban Shalom told Avraham Avinu lech lechos. Avraham Avinu had a biblical command. The Rabban Shalom told him that's min HaTorah. The Rabban Shalom told Bnei Yisrael in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua ben Nun, Vaharashtim es ha'aretz, Vishavtim bo, you should go to Eretz Yisrael, conquer the lands, establish a Jewish government there and live there. He was telling that generation only. In the future generations, it's not a biblical command, but it's only with the Rabban. That's how some commentaries claim is the opinion of the Rambam. There is a commentary on the side of the Sefer HaMitzvahs where he tries to answer all of the kashas that the Ramban poses against the Rambam. The title of the Sefer is Megillas Esther. He tells you why he called the Megillas Esther. His mother's name was Esther, and she passed away right before he was about to print the Sefer, so he wanted to dedicate the book in memory of his mother, so he called the Megillas Esther. It has nothing to do with the contents of the Sefer, just that his mother's name was Esther, so he calls it Megillas Esther. So in this commentary on the side of the Sefer HaMitzvahs, he claims that the reason why the Rambam doesn't count the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael in the, among the 613 mitzvahs is because the Rambam has another klal in the 14 klalim, the 14 sharoshim, which mitzvahs do you count, which mitzvahs you don't count. So the Rambam has the third klal, the third principle is we only count mitzvahs that are noagos ledoros. Whatever mitzvah was only a heruah shor is not to be counted. For example, Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded, "Haremis matcha ala yam uvkoeyu." Pick up your staff, pick up your stick over yamsuf and split and make kriyas yamsuf, split the yamsuf. So this is not to be listed among the 613 mitzvahs. That was only one shot affair. Once in the history of the world, Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to do that. Or the Jewish people were commanded during the period of the Midbar, the 40 years of traveling in the desert, that they should eat up all the man that they get every day. They shouldn't leave over anything to the next day. So that's not listed among the minyan mitzvahs. That was only a heruah shor. It wasn't once in the history of the world. It was for 40 years. But it was only for a temporary period of time. It wasn't a mitzvah that lasted over an forever. What if you have a mitzvah that lasts for 1,000 years, for a few thousand years, but it doesn't last forever and ever? So also, the Rambam holds that doesn't count as a mitzvah. To qualify as a mitzvah, has to be an obligation, which is noheges miyad uladoros. The mitzvah applies throughout all the generations. So in the commentary entitled Megillas Esther, the author claims that the reason why the Rambam doesn't count this mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael among the 613 mitzvahs is because it no longer applies today in our generation, even though when Mashiach will come, the mitzvah will apply, but there was a gap, and for a few thousand years the mitzvah doesn't apply, so that's why the Rambam doesn't count it. Why shouldn't the mitzvah apply in the gap of the few thousand years? What happened? What changed? It used to apply, and it's going to apply, and in the middle of this it got lost. How did it get lost? So he's the first one, this commentary, the Megillas Esther, is the first one to introduce the Agadita, which appears in the end of Gemara Ksubis from a halachic context. The Gemara says in the end of Maseches Ksubis, commenting on the Psukim in the book of Shira Shirim, in the book of Song of Songs, the Pasuk says, Hishbati Eschem Enos Yerushalayim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the Jewish people take three times an oath. The Jewish people took three oaths, the Shalosh Shavuos. What are the three oaths? It doesn't say what. What did we swear? What did the Rabbanu Shlomo make us swear? So it's very obscure Psukim. So the Gemara, the end of Ksubis says that God made the Jewish people swear, among their other things, that we will not, when we will be punished by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we will be in Golos, we'll be sent into exile, we will not force our entry back into Eretz Yisrael. Shalayalu b'choyma, we won't force our way back into Eretz Yisrael. We're not allowed to establish a Zionist movement to force the governments of the world to give us back Medina Yisrael. That's what the Gemara says, that we swore to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we wouldn't do that. So this is the Gemara, the end of Ksubis. Ksubis is a big Masichta. It's over 110 blot Gemara. So when you get to the end there, it's all agadah about the importance. But the husband wants to divorce his wife, he wants to go to Eretz Yisrael, she wants to stay in America, so the husband has the gerechta tain, and the wife is at fault for breaking up the marriage because she refuses to go along. And then the Gemara speaks about how important it is to live in Eretz Yisrael. And then the Gemara has agadah, more agadah. In the middle of all of this agadah, the Gemara makes this statement. So it's a little unclear exactly what to make of this. Is this a halachic principle? Taki, you're not permitted to have a Zionist movement? You're not permitted to force the governments of the world to allow the Jewish people to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael? So for many generations, it was assumed that this is a non-halachic statement. This halacha, this passage in the Gemara in Ksubis is not quoted by the Rif, not quoted by the Rambam. All of the books that codify all the Svarim by the Rishonim, that quote halacha lemaisa, all the demon from the Gemara, nobody quotes this as it is. So it was always assumed that it's an agarita. Agarita also is supposed to mean something, but we don't fully understand what it means. So it was always assumed that it meant that it probably wouldn't work out if the Jewish people would establish a government in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean that we really took a shvuah, we really took an oath that we're not going to force our way back in. It probably means that it wouldn't work out if we would try, but it doesn't mean that there's any. The first one, historically, the first one to make an issue about this and to take that Gemara and to declare that it's a halachic statement is the Megillas Esther. What prompted him to do it? His desire to defend the Rambam. Why didn't the Rambam consider this a mitzvah? Why doesn't the Rambam count living in Eretz Yisrael as one of the 613 mitzvahs? So rather than say that it's only a mitzvah from the Rabbanon, he says, how can you say it's only with the Rabbanon? But it appears in the Chumash. So he says, yeah, it used to be a mitzvah in our Torah, and it's going to be a mitzvah in our Torah, the Moshe HaMashiach, after the Jewish people will re-enter Eretz Yisrael, but it no longer applies during that period of history when the Jewish nation is bound by this oath that they took not to force their way back to re-enter Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the mitzvah didn't apply for 1,000 years, for 2,000 years. So therefore, it doesn't qualify to count as a mitzvah. That's what the Megillas Esther says. So many, after the Megillas Esther, ask that his comment doesn't make any sense. We have a mitzvah that the Rambam counts among the 630 mitzvahs to bring korbanos every day of the year, korban tamid twice a day, to bring a korban musaf, and Shabbos, and on Yom Tov, and on Chol HaMoed, and on Rosh Chodesh, to bring korban Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, to bring musafim. We haven't fulfilled that mitzvah also in 2,000 years. You can only fulfill a mitzvah bringing korbanos when you have a Beis HaMikdash. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, not. But the Rambam does count that as a mitzvah among the 613 mitzvahs, because theoretically it applies throughout all the generations. Practically speaking, if you don't have a Beis HaMikdash, nothing to discuss? Of course not. Let's say there's a mitzvah to make a pidyon haben. My first child was a girl. So theoretically there's a mitzvah pidyon haben, but if you don't have a firstborn boy, so there's no mitzvah pidyon haben. There's a mitzvah to put a mezuzah. If a fellow is homeless, he sleeps in the park, so he doesn't have the mitzvah to put a mezuzah on his door. You don't have a mitzvah that's in non-chanukah licht. If you're bum, you sleep in the park, so you don't have the mitzvah to light chanukah licht. You can only light chanukah candles in your home. If you don't have a home, so there's no mitzvah. The guy's flying in the airplane. The guy's flying all the time. So he has no mitzvah to light, that's not a home. So there's no mitzvah to light the Eretz Chanukah in the airplane. So just because the Jewish people took a shvuah, even if one should assume that the Gemara is to be taken literally, the Jewish people really took an oath that's really binding, that we're not permitted to force our re-entry into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore you say that this mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of Aliyah, is not a mitzvah that applies throughout all the generations. No, there was a temporary impossibility to fulfill a mitzvah for some side reason. But if the mitzvah did apply, and it will apply, Limos HaMashiach, then it does qualify to be counted as a mitzvah. So what the reason that the Megillas Esther gave doesn't really make any sense. And the whole thing that prompted him into saying that that passage in the Gemara is to be taken literally, the Shalda Shua is to be taken literally, that the Jewish people really have prohibited to form a Zionist movement, the whole thing that prompted him to say that was this difficult Rambam. He thought that this would solve the Shverer Rambam. The way the later commentary say, doesn't really explain anything in the Rambam. So the whole Hechrich to take the Gemara as a halachic statement falls apart. So it's usually assumed, most of the poskim assume, that passage in the Gemara, the Enoch is not to be taken literally. It doesn't really mean that there's a prohibition. But nonetheless, because of that line in the Megillas Esther, that's what the Hungarian Rabbanim picked up when the Zionist movement began in Europe so many years ago. So many Rabbanim were opposed to Zionism for the simple reason that the Zionists were anti-religious. The obvious reason, no hidden. The Zionists were anti-religious, and they were trying to get the people to believe that as soon as they'll come to Eretz Yisrael, they won't have to keep any mitzvahs. Because the Gemara has a passage in one place where the Gemara states, mitzvahs betelus lasid lover. When it's going to come, lasid lover, you won't have to keep any mitzvahs. That's what it sounds like it says in the Gemara. So the Zionists were pushing for such an idea, let's all move to Eretz Yisrael. It's like, Zayim Mashiach Zeiten and lasid lover, and we don't have to keep any mitzvahs. Come to Eretz Yisrael and you'll be patur from keeping all the mitzvahs. As long as you still live in Europe, as long as you still live in Chutz Loretz, you're not holding yet by Lasid Lovoy. It's not Nish Mashiach Tzai. As soon as you come to Israel, you don't have to keep any mitzvah. So many Rabbanim in Europe were afraid that if they would allow their followers, their Hasidim or their Balabatim, both by Rabbanim and Misnagdim, and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was one of the big opponents of Zionism, and by the Chassidish Rebbe, there were many who were opposed to Zionism. But they weren't opposed theoretically. They were opposed Lemaise, because the Zionists were anti-religious. They were afraid that there weren't enough religious Jews in Eretz Yisrael that these people could hook up with. Their Hasidim, their followers would go to Eretz Yisrael. They would lose their observance. They would become non-observant people. So that's why they were opposed to it. Their opposition wouldn't apply today. But there was a strong group of Hungarian Rabbanim who were opposed to Zionism because of this interpretation of the Megillas Esther. The Megillas Esther, in his eagerness to answer the difficulty in the Rambam, claimed that the Shalda Shvuos alluded to in the end of Gemara Ksuv, this is really a halachic statement, and the Jews are prohibited to have a Zionist movement. So this is what we've been suffering from all these years, this mistake, mamash, an open mistake, the mistake that Megillas Esther made and taking the Gemara literally. He thought that the Shalosh was to be taken literally. It's very, very difficult. Pela, Gabi Pela, the Minchas Salaza, the Munkacha has in his tshuva, he was one of the most outspoken anti-Zionists of all. So he didn't want to just be opposed to Zionism for practical reasons, because the people who go to Eretz Yisrael, they will lose their religious observance. So he made it on a theoretical level as well. So he says, it's a well-known fact that the position of the Megillas Esther has been generally accepted by the consensus of the Rabban, which is absolutely not true. The overwhelming majority of Rabban did not accept this theory of the Megillas Esther, that it's really to be taken literally. The Shalda Shavuos is to be taken literally. One of the Rabbanim in Queens recently printed a sefer about 3-4 years ago on halacha lamaisa topics, shalish shetshuvos, on all of Arba Chelkei Shulchan Aruch. So he gave me a copy of his sefer. So I was looking through the table of contents. So I saw he has a section on Shabbos, and a section on Chanukah, and a section on Purim, a section on all of them. Then he has one section on the Shalosh Shavuos. So I was wondering, what can he write on the Shalosh Shavuos? So I flipped to that. I looked at that first. He had the dinam of the Drei Wochen. He meant that's not Shalosh Shavuos. There's a word Shavua is a week. So when you say 3 weeks, you say Shlosha Shavuos. Shavua is Lashon Zochem. So you say Shlosha Shavuos. Apparently, this Talmud Chacham didn't know the difference between a Zochem and Tanakeva. Such a tzaddik, he didn't recognize the difference between a male and a female. So Shalosh Shavua is an oath. So when you speak about the three oaths that the Jewish people supposedly took, that's called the Shalosh Shavuos. When you talk about 3 weeks, you call it Shlosha Shavuos. And in halachic literature, the Drei Wochen, in Yiddish you call it the Drei Wochen, the 3 weeks of mourning in between Shavuos Betamuz and Tisha B'Av. In the halachic Shulchan Aruch, it's called the Bein Hamtzorim, or you call it by some other expression, but I don't think in halachic literature it's ever referred to as the Shlosha Shavuos, but it's certainly not to be referred to as the Shalosh Shavuos. That for sure is a misnomer. Anyway, this was the suggestion of the Megillah Esther. Again, the question is, the Ramban claims that living in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah l'doros, that all the generations, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded the Jewish people that whenever possible, they should move to Eretz Yisrael and live there. And the Rambam doesn't count this among the Taryag mitzvahs, and the question is why. So the first answer given by the Knesset HaGdolah is, he quotes from one of the Achronim that the Rambam's opinion is that this mitzvah is only by the Rabbanim. Avraham Avinu was commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that was the biblical obligation. The generation of Yeshua ben Nun was commanded by Kadosh Baruch Hu they should live in Eretz Yisrael. That's a biblical obligation. But on all later generations, even though the Rambam quotes all the dinim that one is obligated to live in Eretz Yisrael, it's only with the Rabbanim. The Megillas Esther says it's not correct. The Rambam certainly feels that it's a biblical obligation. The Pasuk speaks throughout all the generations. But since the mitzvah was suspended temporarily for a period of time because of the Shalosh Shavuos, because of the three oaths, so that's the reason why the Rambam doesn't count it. But the Mos HaMashiach will be a mitzvah again. So the explanation that he gave is really not a valid explanation. If the mitzvah is only suspended for a temporary period of 1,000, 2,000 years, that's not a reason why it shouldn't be counted in the minyan mitzvahs, just like korbanos. The reason that he gave is not correct. So therefore, it should be assumed that the whole interpretation that he gave, that the shalosh shavuos is to be taken literally, is also not necessarily correct. So it's generally assumed completely otherwise. Generally assumed that the Rambam really agrees with the Ramban, that there certainly is a biblical obligation throughout all the generations. Is binding on all the Jewish men and women and children to live in Eretz Yisrael. Why didn't the Rambam count it? So the Avnei Nezer, the Sachar Shavu Rebbe, has a long essay in his Sefer where he was asked exactly this: is there a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael or not? And if you should assume that there is a mitzvah, how come he was a Chassidish Rebbe? So his Chassidim asked, how come the great Chassidish Rebbe has never moved to Eretz Yisrael? Now the same Shaila asked of Misnagdish Rabbanim, so they asked the same thing but a little different wording. If indeed it is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, why is it that the Gedoli HaTorah? They don't say why the Gedoli HaChassidus, why didn't the Gedoli HaTorah all move to Eretz Yisrael? So the Avnei Nezer has a long essay where he says everybody agrees that it's a biblical obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't only Hayra Hashon, the generation of Yishuv Benun. It applies to that all the generations. So why didn't the Gedoli HaChassidus, the Gedoli HaTorah move to Eretz Yisrael? So then he says, so why doesn't the Rambam count it as an inyan mitzvah? So he says, he gives you a different reason why. He says the Rambam already counted. He did count it. It is included in the minyan mitzvahs, and he gives you a klal. He shows that if the Torah tells you have to do one mitzvah in order to lead up to the ability to do another mitzvah, so you don't have to count those as two different mitzvahs. You've already counted the first mitzvah, so obviously the tachlis of the first mitzvah is the second. So that would be a duplication to count it twice. So he says the Rambam already counted one of the mitzvahs in the Torah is hacharem tacharime, that the Jewish people have to come into Eretz Yisrael and wipe out the seven nations, the Zion Umma, to live there. What do you mean? We should wipe out the seven nations and then move back to America? Well, it doesn't make any... Of course you wipe out the seven nations in order to establish a Jewish government, in order to live there. You're in the void. So obviously the mitzvah of Hacharim Tacharim, which the Rambam does count in the 613 mitzvahs, the purpose of the mitzvah of Hacharim Tacharim is in order to lead up to the result that we should establish, number one, establish a government there, a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. And otherwise, why do we have to wipe them out? Let them remain the Balabatim, and we'll move in also. We'll be tenants by them. So obviously that's not enough. We should just live in Eretz Yisrael. We should wipe out the other nations and seize control of the government. We should establish a Jewish government, and we should all live in Eretz Yisrael. So he says the Rambam also agrees with the Ramban. Why did he count it? It is counted. He counted it already. He counted the mitzvah of Hacharim Tacharimim. So it's obvious that this is included. So how come the Gdolei HaChassidus didn't move to Eretz Yisrael? So Taisus already comments in the end of Ksubis, Taisus quotes, it's printed on inside of the page where the Taisus is. They quote in the name of Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen, who was a student of the Rabbeinu Tam, one of the Balei HaTaisus, that this mitzvah of moving to Eretz Yisrael, living there, no longer applies in our generation. That's when he lived in the 1200s. No longer applies today for two reasons. Number one, it's very dangerous to travel to Eretz Yisrael. You can get killed on the way. And number two, it's very difficult once you live in Eretz Yisrael to observe all of the special agricultural mitzvahs, the mitzvahs of Tlis Bar. It's very difficult. So for these two reasons, we don't require of anyone that they should put their life in danger in order to move to Eretz Yisrael. And we wouldn't recommend that they should move to Eretz Yisrael since it's so difficult, practically impossible, to observe the mitzvahs of Tlis Bar. So the later commentaries say, some claim that this is a forgery. The Rav Chaim Cohen never said it. The Maharit wrote a Sefer on Maseches Kiddushin that they use in all yeshivas today. So the Marit in his Sefer on Maseches Kiddushin writes, he thinks that that passage was written by a Talmud Toa, by a student who misunderstood what the Rav Chaim Cohen said. It doesn't make any sense, and he never said it. They deny that he ever said it. Even though it's to say that he did say it, so they comment, Arnenezer writes, that may have been so in the 1200s, but Arnenezer lived 100 years ago, so he says, not Talmud, not so dangerous to travel to Eretz Yisrael. That's before they had the airplane. Today, mamash, no danger at all. You hop on a plane and people should go Keseda. So who's worried about the danger? Maybe now it's a little dangerous, but 2 years ago it wasn't dangerous. So the Avdenezer says, neither reason given by the Taisus, certainly neither reason applies to this man. There's no sakonis and fashis involved in the trip, and there's no great difficulty in observing the mitzvah of Tlis Baretz. If you don't like the Rabbanut Hashgach, you get from the Badatz. You don't like the Badatz, you get from the Agud, you get from the Chul. You can get whatever you want, any hashgacha you like. You can get everything kosher and mahadrim and mahadrim. There's no problem of observing the mitzvahs of Tlis Baretz and Eretz Yisrael. Whatever level of religious observance you feel is the proper level, you can find the hashgacha. There's no problem. So how come Taka nobody observes this mitzvah? No one goes to Eretz Yisrael. So the Avnezer was asked this question 100 years ago. So he says, visualize in your mind, what would a Chassidish Rebbe do? A tzaddik wants to keep all the mitzvahs, he's going to go to Eretz Yisrael. The Chassidim are also going to go to Eretz Yisrael. He says, no, daf machna leben. The Gemara says that if you're living in Eretz Yisrael and there's no food to eat and you're starving, then you're permitted to move to Chutz Lo'aretz. The whole mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael only applies if you will be able to lead a normal life. What happens if you can't find a shidduch? A single fellow is in love with a certain girl and she refuses to go to Eretz Yisrael. He wants to go, she refuses to go. So if we just had the Mishnah, if the couple is married and the husband decides he wants to move to Eretz Yisrael and the wife refuses, so the husband, if he's prepared to break up the marriage, he can go to Eretz Yisrael and he won't have to pay the ksuba money because the wife is obstinate. The wife is responsible for breaking up the marriage because she doesn't want to go along with him to live in Eretz Yisrael. But what if the husband is not prepared to break up his marriage? So what does he do with the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara says, not mechuyev. You're not mechuyev to give away something that's so precious to you, to lead an abnormal life. Let's say the person just won't make a parnasa. If he lives in Eretz Yisrael, he won't make a parnasa. He'll have to live off of tzedakah. He'll have to live off his parents. We'll have to send the money from America. He had a boy from the yeshiva who was a doctor in a hospital. And he's a head of a certain department. And he couldn't make a living. His father had to send him. His father was a Rebbe in YU. So it's never the rich father who was a Rebbe in YU had to send him care packages and then he couldn't take it, so he had to come back to America. Couldn't make a living there being a doctor in a hospital itself. So the halacha says if life is just absolutely miserable in Eretz Yisrael, that you just don't make a living or you just can't find a shidduch, no one wants to move with you with Eretz Yisrael, or even if you can't find a girl to marry in Eretz Yisrael, but you are in love with a specific girl who does want to go in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says you're not mechuyev to marry a different girl. If you have your heart set on marrying this girl, so you're permitted to stay in Chutz Lo'aretz for the rest of your life and not fulfill the mitzvah. Or let's say the person wants to learn Torah by a specific Rebbe. He's just crazy about this Rebbe. And that Rebbe happens to be in America, some happens to be in Europe. In Eretz Yisrael, there are yeshivas on every corner, yeshivas all over. He doesn't want to learn those yeshivas. He enjoys this style of learning over here. So even though he can learn quite well over there, but his heart is set, he would feel so heartbroken to learn by a different Rebbe. So the Gemara says that's considered an abnormal standard of living. So his life will just be made miserable by living in Eretz Yisrael is a nishmuchi. The only one applies if life would be pleasant. So the Abni Nezer, the Sacha Chava, writes in his essay, how would you visualize, let's say, a Hasidish Rebbe who wants to fulfill the mitzvah of living? So how would you visualize? The Rebbe is going to move to Eretz Yisrael with all the Hasidim. Hasidim won't be able to make a living. Whatever living they eked out in Europe, it wouldn't work in Eretz Yisrael. Probably wouldn't work. So he says, so what? The Rebbe is going to go by himself. Okay. The Hasidim are good Hasidim. They'll send them checks. Every month they'll send them checks. So he says, so the Rebbe will be living in Eretz Yisrael. Will he be fulfilling the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael just because he's living in Eretz Yisrael getting the checks from America? So he says, no. He says, if a person made his fortunes in America and he retires and he goes to Eretz Yisrael, he's not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. He says, that's what it says in the Chumash, that when Yaakov Avinu was away from home for over 20 years and he made a fortune of money and then he came back to Eretz Yisrael and he meets his brother Esav in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach and he gives him matonis and he gives him all kinds of presents and gifts. And then he says, I want to give you everything, all the money that I earn in Chutzlaret. Einich say Chutzlaret, Gedai li, I want to give you everything that I earn in Chutzlaret because I want to live in Eretz Yisrael. What's the Shlech? He want to live in Eretz Yisrael on the American money. Why does he want to give away his money that he earned in America when he goes to Eretz Yisrael? Why is it a contradiction? So Abni Nezer says, that's why, because one only fulfills a mitzvah living in Eretz Yisrael. There's no mitzvah just to live there physically. There's absolutely no kima mitzvah. If you live in Eretz Yisrael and you do something productive, you work on a farm, or you have a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, or he's a chassidish rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, he has chassidim, or so he does something. Or today, if the fellow's an American and he retires to Israel, and he uses his American dollars to support an Israeli economy of a Jewish government. But if he moved to Eretz Yisrael 100 years ago or before, what would he be doing with his money from Chutzlaret? Supporting an Arab economy. Supporting an Arab country. He wouldn't be doing anything for building up a Jewish Medina in Eretz Yisrael. So he says, just because the Rebbe would be physically living in Eretz Yisrael, Zok Avnei Nezer, he wouldn't be fulfilling any mitzvah whatsoever. An interesting idea.
Going back to the Gemara saying that only if you would be leading a pleasant life, the mitzvah, how only if...
Not exactly, no, not leading a pleasant life. The Gemara says the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael even applies... Normal, right.
Normal.
The mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael even applies if the life in Eretz Yisrael would be significantly much more unpleasant than in Chutz Lo. The Gemara says the mitzvah even applies, it's preferable to live in a non-Jewish city in Eretz Yisrael rather than to live in Borough Park or in Muncie or in Flatbush and so on, even though the life is much more comfortable there. But it means if life would be miserable, he would just be miserable. He would be heartbroken not to marry the girl that he loves, or heartbroken not to learn by the Rebbe whom he likes so much, or heartbroken that he won't make a parnasa. If it would be a misery, then it's not considered a fair choice at all. Then he's not obligated.
Isn't that unusual in terms of mitzvahs?
It's not a universal rule in mitzvahs. Apparently it's part of the definition of this mitzvah. The mitzvah, the nature of the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is when one is determining where he or she is going to live and it's more or less equal, then he can live a fairly decent life in Eretz Yisrael and a decent life in Chutzlaz, and then he should choose to live in Eretz Yisrael. But if it's totally off balance, the life in Eretz would be utterly miserable, life in Chutzlaz would be very decent. So then, by the very nature of the mitzvah, he's not obligated to choose to live in Eretz Yisrael. A unique detail within this mitzvah. It's interesting, other Gedolim picked up this idea of the Avnei Nezer, and they thought that he was right. They thought that one who just lives in Eretz Yisrael and doesn't have any relationship with he doesn't improve the economy, he doesn't improve the standard of life for other people, he doesn't have any hashpah on anybody else, he just lives in Eretz Yisrael off of money that's sent from Chutz Lo'ez, has no kima mitzvah at all. And they point out, Rabbi Yosef Engel has this in one of his essays, and he points out, he thinks that this idea is correct. He says, we have such a similar idea when the practice is when you write a get, so you write the city in which a get is being delivered, and you identify the city by the rivers or the lakes or the oceans that are nearby. Like in New York City, you write that New York City, which is on the ocean, which is on the Hudson River. That's where they usually write. Most of the Aswan, Kate Yamab on the High Hudson. That it borders on the ocean, it borders on the Hudson River. That's in the days of the Talmud, that's how they used to identify cities. Which rivers and which lakes and which oceans are nearby. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes, and the Achronim in the Shulchan Aruch, it says, you only identify it by an ocean or a sea or a lake or a river if the people in the city have a shaykhus with that river. Just because on the geography next to that river doesn't mean anything. If they use that river for transportation purposes, they use the river, they take the water out of the river, they use it for some purposes. But if the people in the city have absolutely no shaykhis with that river or that lake, they all fly by airplane. And their water comes from heaven. They don't use the water, they don't use for transportation, absolutely nothing. Why do they make, normally cities always used to be established near rivers because of transportation. So why do they establish Reis HaKnesh? But let's say you have a city which is right next to a river, next to an ocean, and they have no shaykhis but the river or the ocean. That just happens to be the geographic location. Then the Pasuk says in Shulchan Aruch that you don't write that this is a Masa, a city, the Yasva, which sits Al Kef Yam Al Nahar Hatzin. So you don't write that it's located next to this river, next to that lake. Because the term Yasva, to sit, Loshevis, Leshev, means that there's some kind of a relationship between the people in the city and that river. So here also, Rabbi Yosef Engel claims that in the Torah, when it says, the expression v'yishavtem, yeshiva, the mitzvah to be yoshev Eretz Yisrael, to sit in Eretz Yisrael, doesn't simply mean to be located there geographically. That's where I happen to be sitting now. That's not a mitzvah, just to be located geographically in Eretz Yisrael is not a mitzvah. It means there has to be some relationship between me and the country, me and the land. I'm improving the economy, I'm improving the society, I'm improving the culture, I'm doing something over there, but I'm going to move into a goyish Eretz Yisrael. 100 years ago, before, I'm going to move into an Arab country, have no relationship with the society there. I'll just be there, living there, off of money from Chutz La'aretz. So that the Nezer claims this is no mitzvah at all. It's interesting, based on his definition, the Nezer was 100 years ago. Rabbi Yosef Engel was also 100 years ago in Crockett. Based on their definition, we understand what the Chassam Sefer wrote over 150 years ago. The Chassam Sefer speaks about Jews who lived, he lived in Hungary, Jews who live in Europe, who send money to Eretz Israel to support the yeshuv. They send money to build houses and to pave highways and to make hospitals and whatever. So he says they are partially in fulfillment of the mitzvah of yeshuv Eretz Israel. How are they partially in fulfillment of any mitzvah? The mitzvah is to live in Eretz Yisrael. So the answer is no. The mitzvah b'shleimusa, the fullness of the mitzvah is to live in Eretz Yisrael and to contribute to the society or to the economy or to the medina, to the Jewish medina there, to the culture there. If a person lives in Chutz La'aretz and he contributes money, and he, because of his money they're paving the highways or they're building hospitals and so on, so he has a partial Kiyum HaMitzvah because he is contributing towards the society of Eretz Yisrael. The full Kiyum HaMitzvah would be if he would live in Eretz Yisrael and contribute, have a shaykhet. But it's a partial Kiyum HaMitzvah, he lives in Chutz La'aretz and he contributes. But if he lives in Eretz Yisrael and doesn't contribute at all, just lives in his own house and Macht Shabbos Fazlich and they send the money from Chutz La'aretz, then many Pesachim hold that there's no mitzvah at all. This same question was posed to Rabbi Shaul Kutner, who is not the Chassidish Rebbe. Is there a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, and if so, how come all the Rabbanim didn't bother to move to Eretz Yisrael? So he says, yeah, absolutely there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, but he writes the following: the mitzvah Bishlei Musa, the fullness of the mitzvah only applies when the whole pasuk is fulfilled as it's written in the Chumash. V'hayrashtem es ha'aretz v'yishavtem bo. When you have a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, then v'yishavtem bo. If you have Jews living in Eretz Yisrael when it's under Jewish control, then you have the mitzvah Bishlei Musa. If it's under the Arabs or under the Turks or under the British, then true, there is a partial mitzvah, but it's not the full complete mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. So until 1948, for so many years till 1948, from the year 70 till the year 1948, there was no Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Shulda Kutner claims, also lived 100 years ago, he claims that there wasn't, the full mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael didn't apply. But still, let it be a partial kiyum. He says, no, the Talmidei Chachamim were busy doing full mitzvahs in Europe. They were teaching Torah, they were paskening shaylos, they were doing oiskim mitzvahs, they were doing other things. So they felt that it wasn't worth it for them to leave all the big mitzvahs that they were doing to do a little mitzvah. The full mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, which is a gewaldige mitzvah, which the Gemara praises with such exaggerated terms, with such haflogas, such exaggeration, the fullness of the mitzvah only applies when there's a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. No, according to his comment, today in our generation, everybody should pack up, all the Rabbanim should, even though all the Rabbanim are busy doing all kinds of things, maybe everybody should pack up now and run to Eretz Yisrael, because now if you live in Eretz Yisrael, it'll be the mitzvah in its complete form, because there is a Jewish government there, we have fulfilled by Hirashim and Zoharitz, and the Yishavtim Bo. So how come not everybody runs? That's the question. How come there's so many people who are not running? Moshe Feinstein was nervous about this. He was one of those who didn't run. So he he was in receipt of a sefer that was written by one of the young men who was killed in Hebron. That was it, about 15 years ago. So he wrote a sefer about the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. So Moshe Feinstein wrote a comment on his sefer. So this fellow, Tzvi Glad, writes in his sefer, he just quotes what it says, all the commentaries say, that it's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's an obligation. So Moshe Feinstein writes, in his opinion, it doesn't really mean that you're absolutely obligated to live in Eretz Yisrael. It means if you go to Eretz Yisrael and you live there, you have a hastach adinta mitzvah. It's a mitzvah sarshus. It's not a mitzvah that, let's say, legging tefillin. Says in the Torah you have to put on tefillin. What does that mean? It means if you went to shul and you put on tefillin, so you're going to get olam haba. But you don't have to go to shul and put on tefillin. That's what it means. It means, no, you have to put on tefillin. Mezuzah. If you put on mezuzah, you got a mitzvah. If you don't put on mezuzah, you didn't do anything wrong. No! If you don't put on mezuzah, you have failed to do the mitzvah. You're absolutely obligated to put on a mezuzah. You're obligated to say Kriya Shema twice a day. You're obligated to put on tefillin. So the same, we assume you're obligated to go move to live in Eretz Yisrael. So Moshe Feinstein says, no, it doesn't mean that. It means it's a mitzvah or a shus. If you'll do it, you'll get schar, you'll get reward. But it doesn't mean that you have to go do it. It's a very strange notion. There is such a concept as mitzvah or a shus. We have a few obscure cases. We have a few situations here and there where we say a person is not absolutely obligated to do this, but if he does it, he'll get schar. It is a mitzvah or a shus. But to take this pasuket to say, or to take the situation, let's say the couple is married for 30 years, living in New York, the husband's making $1 million a year, and then the husband says, okay, he just came to Rabbi Shechter, she heard that there's a mitzvah living there, so packing up, he's moving to Eretz Yisrael, and the wife says, what are you, crazy? I'm staying here. So the husband has the right to divorce his wife without paying a ksuv because she's obstinate. Why? Because he wants to do a midas chasidus. He has the right to divorce his wife without paying ksuv because he wants to do a midas chasidus. He's not obligated to go to Eretz Yisrael, just if you live in Eretz Yisrael, you got a mitzvah, but you're not mechuyev too. Does that make sense? The simple context, the simple reading of the Mishnah in its context, it clears clearly, not the way Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes. That's why people can't understand. How can he say such a thing, that there's no obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael, just if you live in Eretz Yisrael, you got a mitzvah? It's generally assumed not so. So the shaila is, how come so many people don't go, how come the Rabbanim, leave out the Balabat, let's pick on the Rabbanim, how come the Rabbanim don't go to Eretz Yisrael? So the Rabbonim all know the Rabbonish Yisroel. So the Maharam Shik was the Talmud of the Chasam Sofer. So one of his students was a rabbi in a little Hungarian village 150 years ago. And in Hungary at that time they were all fighting reform. It was a big thing. Like in America today, there's so much ignorance and so much lack of observance of mitzvah. So the Rabbonim are not really, the Rabbonim in America are not the typical Rabbonim that used to have in Europe years ago, just sat and learned, like the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, they sit in London and pass Mashiach, the Rabbanim in America try to get people to become Shomrei Mitzvahs, they deal in all kinds of other things. So this rabbi was a Talmud Chacham, the Talmud of the Mamshik was a Talmud Chacham, and he wasn't really able to sit and learn the way he would enjoy it. He was busy doing like a rabbi in America. He had to convince the Balabatim that they have to keep kosher, and have to keep Taras HaMishpach, and so on. And then he was offered, the dream of his lifetime came true. He was offered a position in Eretz Yisrael by a frumma community. He'd be able to move to Eretz Yisrael and sit and learn and keep shiurim and pass mashal. That's what he always wanted. So he made up his mind, that's it. He's leaving Hungary and he's going to move to Eretz Yisrael. He's going to grab the opportunity. So he sent a letter to his Rebbe, the Maharam Shik. The Rebbe should give him a bracha before he goes. So the Maharam Shik sent him a letter, and he felt that the letter was of halachic importance, so he included it in his tshuvas. He sends him a letter, he says, if you ask me for a bracha, it means that you want me to consent to what you're doing, you want me to agree. He says, I can't agree. We have a principle in the Gemara that one is busy doing one mitzvah, is not obligated to be mafsik in the middle. Ha'isik b'mitzvah, tatam an ha-mitzvah. One is busy doing one mitzvah, is not obligated to be mafsik in the middle and to go take care of another mitzvah. Not only is he not obligated, the Ritva comments on the in his Sefer on Sukkah at the end of the second paragraph, where the Gemara discusses this theme. The Ritva says not only is he not obligated to be mitzvah, he's forbidden. He's prohibited, because once you say that he's not obligated to take care of the second mitzvah, even if the second mitzvah is much more important than the first mitzvah, it doesn't matter. The mitzvah that you're busy taking care of is considered the most important mitzvah in the world. Whatever mitzvah you're taking care of is considered the most important mitzvah, and whatever other mitzvah he didn't begin to take care of yet, that's less important. So the Ritva says, since you're Isaac in mitzvah A, and you're exempt from fulfilling mitzvah B, so you're prohibited to be mopsic in the middle of A to do B. B is not considered like a dvarashus, like a non-mitzvah, because under the present circumstance, you're not obligated to take care of that mitzvah. So So he writes to the student of his, right now you are busy fulfilling the mitzvah of rabbinating. What's the mitzvah of rabbinating? He says, not learning Torah. The Talmud writes to him, he's not learning so much Torah. Fighting reform, that's your mitzvah. You have to try to be mekayem kiruv. You're doing kiruv work. NCS1, you're doing kiruv work with the Baal HaBatim. He says, you're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to be different kind of rabbinating. You're going to be learning Torah there. So he says, and even though learning Torah is much greater mitzvah than kiruv work, in the level of mitzvahs, but he says, right now, if you are doing mitzvah, if you didn't begin anything yet, and they would offer you two positions, two alternatives, either to go here or to go there. So he says, you pick whichever one is best, so pick, go there, it's so gewaldic, wonderful. But he says, right now, you already are in the midst of Rabbanus and Rabbanus and Chutz Loris, and you're busy fighting reform. If his Rabbanus and Chutz Loris would be the same nature as the Rabbanus and Eretz Yisrael, here he teaches the Baal HaBatim, and there he teaches the Baal HaBatim. So move to Eretz Yisrael, and do that mitzvah plus. Do the mitzvah, the same mitzvah, Mali Hach, Mali Hassam. What's the difference whether he's a rabbi here, he's a rabbi there? Because move to Eretz Yisrael, be a rabbi there, and in addition, fulfill also the mitzvah, living in Eretz Yisrael. But he says, if the nature of the mitzvah is different, that in America he's doing kiruv work, and Eretz Yisrael is going to do learning, or a different, let's say the rabbi in America is traveling rabbanis, and decides he wants to leave the rabbinate and go into business in Eretz Yisrael. He must have flipped his lid, why should he want to go to business in Eretz Yisrael, or whatever, but he decides that he wants to leave the rabbanis, which is a mitzvah, and go into business as living in Eretz. So he says, no, ha'isik b'mitzvah patam and ha'mitzvah, you're exempt from about moving to Eretz Yisrael. So he would say that we're all involved in America, all those who are in rabbanis and chinuch are involved in kiruv over here. So he felt that it was prohibited. That's what he told us, he felt that it was prohibited for people who are involved in kiruv work in America to leave to go to Eretz Yisrael. There is an interesting...
Marjan says that one can acquire a partial atonement of one sin by being very good. When you live in Eretz Yisrael, it's certainly much more of an atonement of one sin.
Everybody has their pet mitzvahs. Everybody has their pet mitzvahs that we ignore.